Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 3 of Panning the Stream. I am your host, Dan Reichert, alongside my wife, Bianca Reichert.
Hey there, Dan. How are ya?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing real well.
We are coming fresh off of watching a couple of episodes of Hellevator. Sitting here on our bed right now with the dog, ready to talk about that. But before we go into that real quick, a couple pieces of housekeeping here. First of all, I don't know if you've seen the podcast art for the show, but that is by Lunar Saloon. You can find them at Lunar Saloon on Twitter. They were fantastic to work with and really like how that turned out. So just wanted to send some business or some attention their way because they do some really great work.
It's real good.
Also, before we get into Hellevator, just a couple little notes here. We actually watched like 3 more episodes of Sunshine Sentosaki.
We did.
We like that show a lot.
It's a good show. It's a plain good show.
Yeah, and like we will probably never cover it officially on this show, on Painting the Stream, again, because I think you know the drill if you heard that episode or if you've seen any episodes of Sunshine Sentosaki. But goddamn, if that's not a great show to just, if we want to relax at night, sit on the couch, and just watch him enjoy his beer and his cento and whatever food he happens to be eating, I don't think we're anywhere near done watching that show.
No, I want to learn about every bathhouse there is in Japan.
Yes.
And I want to know what yummy cuisine is nearby for every one of those locations.
And then eventually we're going to visit as many as we can when we go to Japan.
Well, that's what we're saying. Who knows if that actually happens.
We're going to make it happen.
Yeah?
We don't bullshit here.
That's true.
We're going to make it happen.
I forgot we don't bullshit
We
here.
Don't bullshit. What do we say?
The other place where we bullshit, and here we do not do the bullshit.
We don't bullshit on Panning the Stream, honey.
That's right.
All right?
That's right. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Do we bullshit here?
We don't bullshit here, Dan.
Okay. We also, last night, watched the first half hour of Wild Hogs, the spiritual predecessor to Old Dogs, which I still hold up as the worst film I've ever seen. And, you know, this is not How Did This Get Made. We're not doing watch-alongs of films. But boy, oh boy, that first half hour, Wild Hogs.
It was really something.
Really something. They really go hard on a couple jokes that weren't funny at the very beginning, and they just hammer it home, and it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Yeah. I think some of you can probably relate to me when I say I feel strongly that my cousin Nikki, my really lame cousin Nikki, wrote and directed that film. I'm sure a lot of you people out there have really lame cousins named Nikki.
Everyone's got a lame cousin that would make Wild Hogs, hypothetically.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. And if anyone hasn't seen Old Dogs, honestly, I think it's the worst, the most fascinatingly horrible movie I've ever seen.
I wouldn't even classify it as horrible because it was so fascinating.
It is.
It was like so incredibly sad. And John Travolta kind of plays the same character in both movies, right? Like he's
aging
tough guy,
business, cool
manly
guy.
Man, like too cool for school.
But you can tell he's insecure and he's not actually happy with his life.
You just can't buy it with John Travolta because he's so fucking lame as a human. Oh, yeah. And it just permeates everything he does.
Yep.
It was worth seeing just in a way that one might observe someone having a progressively worse disease.
Yeah, just a almost 90 minutes long train wreck.
Yeah.
Almost 90
bad.
Feature film, almost 90 minutes long.
It was
long.
Bad.
Yeah. So, with that out of the way, we are here to talk about Hellevator. That is on, we just watched that on Netflix, I believe, originally aired on the Game Show Network, premiered on October 21st, 2015, and it's actually done 2 seasons now. I don't know if it's actually currently still making new episodes, but yeah, they got 2 seasons out of that. So,
would you believe that this show is produced by the same guy who produced Whiplash and Get Out?
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, 2 of the best movies I've seen in the last year or so.
And Hellevator.
I did not know that until just now. Holy shit, really?
Yeah.
That goes to show you, I wonder how much a lot of producers actually have to do with the creative side of these shows, because not a whole lot of similarities between those 3 things.
I don't know, because the dude's name is Jason Blum, and we went to the Soska Twins Twitter, and you guys will find out about that in a second.
Oh, you're going to learn about the Twisted _ Twins.
But in their Twitter bio, they say that they host Blumhouse's Hellevator.
Okay.
So, they're clearly owning the name.
Yeah.
So, I don't think that guy's shying away from the fact that he produced it.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, Blumhouse, you know, good for you.
Blumhouse. I never know how to pronounce that name, but...
Well, he's got a hell of a thing on his hands here with Hellevator. It is... God, where do we fucking start? Okay, so this is another one of those... Well, I don't want to compare it to Mad Madhouse, because Mad Madhouse is more of the, I guess, traditional, here's a bunch of people living in a house, right, or living in these circumstances or whatever.
A lot of contrived drama between the contestants.
Yeah, that's more of a serial thing where, you know, we're following these characters throughout an entire season, whereas Hellevator seems to be Each episode is focused on a different group of three contestants. And we watched...
Well, Dan, it doesn't seem to be. It is.
I guess by definition, that is what's going on here, yes. And so it's three different people each time. And if any of you troopers out there listening to the show or anything like us and watched two episodes, you probably got to the end of episode one and thought, oh, Christ, I have to watch another episode of Hellevator.
You know what? Honestly, it wasn't that bad to sit through.
I mean, it moves in that fast-paced, you know, reality show snappy format that, you know, it's not like these long, drawn-out shots or anything like right. that. It moves.
Yeah.
But the shit that you're seeing and the shit that's happening is...
It's not... Like, I get it's trying to obviously be scary, but who is it scary for? It's not scary for the audience. And no. If you're there, it just looks like you're in a party city during Halloween time.
Yeah, it's like the most fucking... Like, it's like if a neighborhood, like, junior high wanted to put together a Silent Hill-themed haunted house.
Yeah.
You know, with, like, the budget of a junior high. Mm-hmm. But you can tell right away. So they walk into what looks like some fucking warehouse in L.A.
It's a slaughterhouse, Dan.
I'm sorry, it's a slaughterhouse. There's fake blood, which it doesn't even look remotely real. It just looks like this shitty spray paint, blood on the walls and everything. And then just the most kind of schlocky horror movie stuff, like, oh, there's creepy dolls and clown toys, and oh, there's a spider and the blood, and like, oh, here's a TV that's, you know, like the bunny ears are causing it to, the static, and oh, it's a two-headed silhouette on the screen. Like, it's just the lamest
it's
shit
really
in the world.
Lame. Yeah.
And so these episodes start with the group of three contestants walking in and be like, oh, God, I'm not ready for this. I'm scared. Mm-hmm. And the first three we get are the three most Massachusetts people I've ever seen in my entire life. They're all from Massachusetts, I believe from Boston. We got Katie, we got Brian, and we've got Irene. And they're saying stuff like, hey, yeah, we're just on this show because, I don't know, we need to pay rent. I've got student loans.
That's totally fair. I mean, what other reason would they have? So my favorite part when they introduce... the contestants, they like quickly flash to this appears to be like a bulletin board with a bunch of strings, and I assume the Sosker sisters, this is like their data, this is their records.
It's like
on
this
the
weird homeland board with like the red yarn and the like cutouts and everything,
and these two twins spent some time gathering this information apparently, and so it lists their fears, and Brian, who's this big manly man who has such a heavy Bostonian accent that he actually sounds Australian. His fears are babies.
That was his fear? Well, too bad for him, because there's a bunch of weird, creepy, burnt-up babies in this episode that don't look real at all. But yes, the Saska twins, that's their name, right? Saska? We see their Twitter handle on screen, which is twisted_twins. They basically live in...
Saskra.
Saskra twins. They are in this, like... Claw lair.
So they're in a control room.
Yes.
And I guess it's implying that they're controlling everything that happens in these trials.
Yes.
But they're sitting in a control room, controlling everything from an iPad. They're not even using all the buttons that are around them.
And they don't even show the screen of the iPad, because I think that would necessitate someone like making a fake user interface
UI,
or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's always this like 90-degree shot of a finger pressing what is presumably a screen.
Why do they have to be in a control room for that, though?
Yeah, it's all these different TVs and stuff, and they're very much like, oh, we're delighting in the torture of these little...
Yeah, they just sound like Jane from Daria with a bad sign. Infection.
Well, let's hear what they sound like here.
She took the longest puzzle back to the elevator. Oh no, wait. This is my favorite one. You found a pile of bricks.
You know, spooky shit. So the way this is structured is these girls. Okay, this whole show is kind of like Legends of the Hidden Temple. I kept thinking of this, mm-hmm. and they are like the Olmec, the talking head.
Yes.
Because if you remember at the beginning of each Legends of the Hidden Temple, Olmec would tell you a thing like, oh, this conquistador, he found the gold and then buried it, but then it's been lost for 200 years until now. Mm-hmm. And then basically, like, Kirk Fogg, the host of, apparently I know way too much about Legends of the Hidden Temple, but...
Now, is this a brain or a brawn?
This was brains and brawn, honey.
Oh,
you had to know the
got
story,
it.
And you also had to be able to, like... cross a lake thing on a shitty kayak or
got
something.
It.
So everything would be kind of like structured around this story. Like, oh, just like Don Quixote had to fight a windmill or whatever the hell he did, you're going to have to do this dumb windmill themed thing. And that's what this is. So basically at the beginning of each episode, the Twisted Sisters or whatever, they tell the story about some horrifying, dark, you know.
First it's the triplets.
Yeah, it's just the like schlocky, you know, campfire stories. And so the triplets are these three kids who were orphaned by a fire. And the first one, Janie, she wore a clown mask that made her feel pretty again because her face was all burnt up. And at some point, like, she had to go into the washroom of her school to, like, it was suspended from the ceiling or it was stuck up in a panel or something.
The kids made fun of her and took her mask and then stuck it up high and she couldn't reach it and she tried to reach it and then she fell and died instantly.
Yeah, so she dies in the washroom of the school trying to get this mask. And so now the first challenge is Irene has to go in there.
Mm-hmm.
Irene has to leave the elevator and go in solo. They've got walkie-talkies and stuff. The other two are in there. And she is walking through, like, all of these challenges start with someone walking through what looks like just like this empty
pitch
parking
black
garage.
Yeah.
And again, I just assume this is like some Burbank parking garage or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, pitch black. And there's always just like some themed scary thing scurrying around.
Mm-hmm.
So since this is supposed to be Janie or whatever, there is a, oh, Janie, my peach. There's this Janie running.
Little Janie or peach, is she ripe yet?
So there's this girl with a weird face makeup or whatever. It looks like when they first unmasked Kane. And she's running around behind Irene. And, you know, it's just lots of, like, sounds and Irene being spooked out and everything.
It's so dumb because they go to such great lengths to build this backstory. So Irene finds a classroom in this on this floor, but it's in a slaughterhouse. Like, what is the classroom doing there?
Yeah.
You know, do you remember that show Fear on MTV?
I do. Yeah, that's where they had lots of night vision stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they would send these young kids out into these, like, dark corridors to do all these tasks. But that was, like, actually genuinely scary.
Yeah,
because all you had was that shitty, grainy camera footage. And, like, it was just in these, like, real locations. I mean, I don't know if they were real, but they seemed real. It's not like this, which is obviously not, you know, a school.
I think
that show did it right. That show was, like, genuinely scary. This is just, I don't know who this is scary for. And the thing is, like, those Saskra sisters are, obviously they're gothic twins, so they fit the show. But they're apparently known as filmmakers. And if you're the type of horror fan that, like, is so privy to these underground filmmakers, you wouldn't be watching this.
Right, like, what's the demographic? Why are you bringing in these, like, horror filmmakers, like anyone who actually, like, again, we don't know if they make actually good horror movies or if they just, that's what their Twitter bio says or something.
Well, they are responsible for Dead Hooker in a Trunk, so I would say the answer is yes.
Do they have an IMDb page?
Probably.
I haven't checked. Dead Hooker in a Trunk, when did that come out? I haven't heard of that one.
It was apparently a movie they made in college.
Okay.
And
is this like the American movie thing? Coven? So
they made it in college with, I think it cost them $2,500.
Okay. And they're legit sisters?
Oh, yeah, they're real sisters.
Okay, they do look similar.
They look exactly the same.
Yeah, I guess twins, that happens, I guess.
Yeah, I think they're identical twins.
Yeah, that'll definitely happen with identical twins.
Yeah.
So Irene gets into this classroom and, you know, just spooky, whatever, haunted house crap is everywhere. And then there's Bart Simpson writing on the chalkboard saying, I'm not afraid of Janie, I'm not afraid of Janie, over and over and over again. And then this fucking, like, ghost chalk shows up, this, like, floating piece of chalk. Which, it's a quick shot, and I don't know if they, like, CG'd it in, or, like, how they did this. I'm not sure.
The chalk probably had a piece of, like, metal in it, and then someone was on the other
like
side
a
with a really
thing
powerful
or something.
Magnet. I have no idea if that's how they did this.
Or just
but
like,
can you imagine, like, if I'm totally right about that?
I mean, that's conceivable?
If I didn't add this, I'm sure people out there would think, like, oh, that has to be what they did. Maybe it is what they did.
I was so short, and it looked so shitty that I thought for a second that, like, did they just fucking CG this thing? Like, there's not a whole lot of, like, CG.
Well,
there's...
they would have also had to CG the you should be that the chalk writes.
That's the thing, yeah. So it says, I'm not afraid of Janie all over it, and that is what the ghost chalk is writing. It's like, oh, you should be in cursive. I'm curious if anyone out there, you know, feel free to email panningthestream
gmail.com.
No?
No.
I'm curious.
I'm really not that interested. And we're definitely not going to be interested by the time someone gets back to us with that information.
All right. Good point.
So don't.
Forget everything I said.
Yeah. Don't do that.
You can tweet at panthestream. So anyway, the desks all kind of flip open and there's lots of reacting to this stupid stuff. And Irene is yelling at everything that happens. basically tying into the story, there are 20 masks in the washroom of the school. And so she has to grab a chair, and she's got 3 minutes to go in there and find the one described in the story. It's one with blue diamond eyes and blue diamond eyes and a red nose.
She finds the mask. I mean, it's obvious, right, people? That's what's going to happen. Yes. You don't have to explain the whole thing. She finds the mask, they get the money.
A creepy girl pops out. She gives the girl the mask. The girl, yes.
The little ghost seems, like, thankful for the mask and then scurries away. I don't know why, like, she had the ability to put this whole fucking puzzle together. She couldn't just grab the mask for herself.
Yeah, there are chairs there.
And furthermore, like, what kind of ghost has such specific requirements for setting their soul free? Like, I need you to find the correct hanging mask, and I'm not going to provide you with any more details than what you heard 10 minutes earlier.
Yeah, this very specific story.
What an asshole ghost. I would just be like, listen, get me a hamburger, and we'll call it even. My soul will be free, and I'll stop haunting you.
I mean, she's not threatening. She seems pretty happy and gracious about the whole mask thing.
She's super threatening.
No, she just kind of scurries around in the parking garage for a while.
She's a fire orphan.
It's the worst kind.
And did you see her face? She has the cane face.
It's true. She does have the cane face. Although it was emotional scarring with him, but I won't go into wrestling too far on this one. So, basically, the girl, Irene, has to run back. And here's the thing about all these challenges, is they're all
super dumb.
They're all super duper dumb, but they're all that they're timed.
Theoretically they're timed, but the little clock just pops in whenever it's convenient for the show.
Yeah, so it just kind of pops up and disappears on a whim, and then almost all of these end, like, they come down to the wire.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, with 5 or less seconds left, they get back into the elevator, because that's what they
do. It's like in every Overwatch match ever.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Comes down to the very last second. So she makes it back, and then she gets like $5,000 or something for that first one. And
we move easy on to money. Easy money.
All these challenges seem really, so really easy. Even, like, because you have to try to, like, put yourself in their positions, and, like, none of this stuff actually seems scary or difficult at all.
Right,
so, I don't know. I feel like if we were on the show, we'd be
I don't think we would ever get cast in a show like this for that reason, because we'd be cool as cucumbers. You and me are so cool all the time. We never get shaken by anything.
Elevator, if you're making a season 3, that's a direct challenge. Dan and Bonk.
Yeah, whereas Richard, who is a contestant in the second episode, I think Sinead asked him, "What's wrong, Richard?" And he says, "I'm on a elevator."
Yes. That's immense words. You know, like, I don't want to be on this elevator.
I mean, but I like how he said, "I'm on a elevator," like implying that he's been on multiple elevators in his life and he just hates them. Like, I'm on a elevator.
I'm on a elevator off Sepulveda Boulevard. You know, it's just, you know, that you turn a right past the...
Found myself on a elevator again. God damn it, this always happens to me.
So the second triplet, Edgar... He was in a psych ward because of what happened to Janie and the fire and everything.
Oh, you don't even bother explaining the story. Okay, it's so fucking stupid.
Straight jacket guy, left to die. The important part is this challenge is called Enchain Asylum. And
they really like combining two words in the show.
You get the sense that the people who came up with this, they come up with it and it's like, that's it. Enchain Asylum.
They probably wrote down a bunch of possible titles for a horror-based game show, and they saw Elevator and they're like, all right, we're going to build a show around this name. And one of the names that didn't make the cut was Enchain Asylum.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we can make that a game? We can make that a challenge?
For sure. These are all just rejected game show titles.
Totally. I mean, Elevator's not even the best one.
Elevator's pretty good, Daniel.
Kind of like, I guess the chain part is too specific. You can't make a whole show called Enchain Asylum.
Well, I mean, one could try.
I'm sure that's on, like, Amazon Prime Video, and we'll get to that in episode 50 of this. So, this hockey mask thing, this, like, goalie mask, comes out of the wall. Brian puts it on, has to lie on this stretcher, and it rolls away. And here's the thing, he just kind of, like, wakes up. Like, there's not a transition here. They don't even, like, go to commercial and come back. Like, he goes from, like, rolling away on the stretcher with a mask on to, like, waking up, standing up in a giant room with chains suspended everywhere from the ceiling and everything. And
well, I mean, it wouldn't look too scary if a whole production crew ran out and just started putting chains on this guy's body.
I guess that's probably what actually happened. Damn, I'm trying to suspend my disbelief here.
Sorry.
So he wakes up, and it looks so dumb, because the challenge is he has to, like, basically escape all this shit. He has to take his mask off and he has to take all the chains off. And the places where he can disconnect the chains are marked by these yellow markers, but they're just fucking wiffle balls. They're like these neon yellow or green wiffle balls.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even, like, bother to spray paint them, like, you know, metal and blood colored or anything like that. They look like shit. So he, this is the thing that annoys me. He takes the mask off via a hook above him.
Yeah.
And then the first thing we see is this extreme close-up of his face. Like, the camera is right in his face, and he doesn't look at it. He does this, like, dramatic, where am I? Whereas, if that was real, if that wasn't a staged shot, you know, the first thing you see is the giant camera lens in your face. You're going to look at it. You're not going to be looking back and forth. Like, that is such a tip-off that if you think for a second about how this show is produced, that obviously, that was like, all right, that was great, Brian. Now can we get a shot of you taking the mask off and looking around? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Again, it feels stupid to have to, like, dissect this dumbass show, but, like, it takes me out of it. It takes me out of it.
Sure, yeah. Yes. Otherwise, you were completely wrapped up in Hellevator as if it was,
I was
something that happened to your grandparents.
Like, I was terrified when the Slipknot guy shows up in a straight jacket and approaches Brian, and Brian says, quote, yo, you're gonna get bodied, son. So anyway, he wins. He gets out of his crap. $10,000, gets back in the thing. And then he said something about, like, oh, I'm gonna pee my pants. I have no idea if this sounds like a Bostonian accent or something. Is this even close?
No, not at all.
Like, I'm gonna pee my pants. No?
That's a little good.
Can you do it?
Oh, no.
Okay. So, and then we cut back to the Twisted Sisters, the Saska, whatever. And one girl goes, please don't pee in our elevator. And the other one goes, they're still peeing it from last week. Which makes me think, like, this is the pilot. This is the first episode.
They've had the elevator for a while. Obviously, they've been torturing people. And just now it's being recorded.
Yeah, so, like, that's what we're meant to assume here, is that, like,
I can't even imagine what the elevator would look like under a blacklight from all the years of elevating that it has done.
You have them just getting their rocks off by, like, bringing in these fools and testing them. I love the idea of they've been doing this for years just on their own for fun, and then David Bloom or whoever the producer or whatever was like, have you heard about those two twins that just torture people in their elevator? We gotta make a show about that! Let's get the cameras out there!
This is actually just a documentary. This isn't even a game show.
Yeah, yeah. And so then we go to the third triplet. It's Atticus. So he works in the incineration room in a tire factory, which, if your family is all, like, dead and disfigured and tortured by a fire, I don't think I would work in an incineration room.
Atticus got obsessed with fire, Dan. If you listened, you would know that.
Oh, okay. I missed that point. I caught the part where he got let go from that job and then burned a dozen co-workers to death in a rampage before committing suicide, which leads us to, rest in pieces, the third challenge. This is Katie's turn, and surprise, she has to walk through a fucking dark parking garage at the beginning. But instead of a creepy girl scurrying around, it's just, like, random tires. Which, I love the idea of just these, you know, PAs or whatever having, like, okay, roll the tire now, roll the tire.
Yeah. And then she has to put those Tetris-like pieces together.
Yeah, she gets to a room with, like, a barrel fire and a bunch
Katie
of stupid dolls.
Puzzled.
Is that a direct line?
Yeah.
Oh, God. And there's also, as she's walking through this thing first, though, there's a dude with, like, a stick running around and yelling. And all of these, like, scary people that just show up or pop up in the elevator or whatever, they never do anything. They never come anywhere close to, like, attacking them or posing any real threat. They just go, like, hit a thing with a stick and then run away.
Yeah, I want to see these contestants, to see them get brutalized. I want their faces turned to a bloody pulp. I want this to be real. Put their bodies on the line. This money is too easy, my friend. They're making it too easy. I want some bodily harm. Imagine how neat that would be. I mean, obviously not neat, but, like, that would be a really interesting show.
I got a show for you. We should watch Wipeout. Wipeout is a fantastic show.
That's like Ninja Warrior, but the people aren't
But hilarious,
athletes.
And they're not athletes, and they're just getting punched in the face with, like, giant boxing gloves on springs. It's kind of comedy at its most pure. I can't believe we've been together this long, and we have not watched an episode of Wipeout together.
Well, I remember you showing me, like, a compilation of the greatest hits.
Yes.
So haven't I, in a sense, already seen the entire show?
I mean, that's just, you don't really get the full ambiance of the show if you're just watching a montage. It's, look, I'm a film studies major. I'm not going to get all, you know, academic on you here, but
please,
we'll watch
don't.
No, I won't. So yes, she gets to this, well, first of all, she has to dig through all these, what they call cremated remains, and it's just this massive amount of ashes. Like, if these were actual, like, after a cremation, there's a tiny little bit of ashes that are produced, so this is, like, hundreds of people's cremated remains, and she digs through that to get to the, this is where that you have found the pile of bricks line happens, and she just has to, like, put these fucking fake-ass Tetris blocks together to fill this wall up, and shocking, she does it, and she gets back to the elevator with, like, 5 seconds left.
Yeah.
$15,000, easy. And then, with three things done, three challenges done, it's time to actually go to hell. There is an H button on the elevator. It takes you down to hell.
Wow. Here I was thinking you had to live a miserable life of crime and terror to go to hell. But all you have to do is accidentally press the H button on the elevator, and you'll go straight there.
Just gotta sign some waivers after a Craigslist ad says they want three friends to do some dumb shit, and next thing you know, you're going straight to hell. Dante's Inferno. So, they take the elevator down to actual, literal Christian hell. And, so, the straitjacket guy pops up in the elevator for a second, then he's not. I can't tell if there's, like, a rotating panel, or if it was just, like, this obvious cut, and then they just, like, bring Steve out and take him out of costume. So, the actual hell floor is the labyrinth. And in this episode, that is just, like, a building.
You mean the labyrinth.
Welcome to the labyrinth.
Labyrinth.
It's the labyrinth. And there are body bags everywhere. And so, I guess the kayfabe here is that there are 56 bags. They got to find the one with Edgar in it. And they have to find him and throw him into a cell to lock him in prison forever. And he's going to wake up in 4 minutes. So, they've got 4 minutes to dig through 56 body bags. Some of them have cash in them. And, like, they've got a bag so they can... Basically, it's two objectives here. Get Edgar in a cell, get a bunch of cash in the bag. You get to keep whatever stuff you get. Mm. And they're running around opening all these, and a lot of them have just, like, dumb zombie, you know, like, Walking Dead extras in it. Which, again, when they unzip them, it cuts to the, like, super obvious camera thing of the zombie coming out of the bag, looking at the camera, going, and then it cuts to the wide actual shot of the contestants, and it looks nothing like that. And then there's also ones with just random spurts of fluid or blood?
Your complaints are far too technical.
I'm trying to get immersed in the elevator, in the lore of elevator here. I'm a man who loves a good story.
Yeah.
And it's really, there are just some inconsistencies.
Well, everyone knows for a fact that you hate story, Daniel. You've said it repeatedly.
I have never said I hate stories. I say I play games for the gameplay first, and a nice story is a nice thing. I love the story of The Last of Us. Metal Gear Solid is my favorite story of all time. I love a good video game story. It's not the reason I play video games, though. It is the reason I watch movies. How about that?
How about it?
It's the reason I watch fine television products like Elevator. And I think it failed on this front.
Proceed with your criticism.
Okay. Well, some of those bags squirt on you. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what that could be. If they didn't make it look like blood, I imagine it's not ejaculate.
It's probably not zombie ejaculate.
It's probably pus or something. I don't even know what it could be. It's when they unzip the bag, water or something shoots out.
Yeah, I'm not familiar enough with anatomy or, like, what happens to corpses after they die or anything, but I don't think they're just, like, pressure-filled sacks of fluid that, you know, the slightest breeze will cause them to spray all over your face.
Yeah, I don't think that happens.
Yeah. So, they do it. They win. They get the stuff back to the elevator. And then this is one of the weirder things. They cut back to the sisters, the twin sisters, and one of them goes, "Damn you, Boston Strong." Which, that's a fucking phrase that got big after the Boston Marathon bombings.
So I suspect that they named their team Boston Strong, much like the next team called themselves YOLO.
Okay, that's maybe less bad, and maybe I missed that part. Because if she was just, like, referencing this thing that was referencing a terrorist attack, that's a weird thing to put in this dumbass show.
Damn you, 9/11, never forget.
Why did they name themselves that? So Boston Strong wins $51,000. And then they do this weird thing on the way up. Like, the elevator stops at the wrong floor, and there's, like, an evil dentist, and he's, like, drilling into a guy's face, and there's blood squirting everywhere. But then, yeah, Brian says, like, "Yeah, I'm wicked proud of the team," and just, like, a straight-up Jimmy Fallon, Rachel Dratch sketch voice. Like, it's unbelievable how much of just, like, Boston characters these guys are. So that's it. Our Boston heroes win everything, coincidentally, with, like, a second left on the clock every single time.
Yeah.
They walk away with $51,000 and some soiled clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, like, we get what this show is now. Real quick, we'll introduce the episode two folks. We got DJ YOLO. Richard met Raina and Sinead at USC. Raina says she's a star and a control freak, and Sinead just wants some money, which I understand. The dumb story here, I'm not going to go into the whole thing. There's a fucking undertaker in a Midwest town. Business was slow, so he starts killing everyone, and he, like, steals their watches and jewelry and everything that they're supposed to be buried with. And then, yeah, they're all dumb challenges. You got Dead Ringer, where DJ YOLO has to, like, match the tones of bells to, like, these five items and match them all and get back to the thing. He totally does it. It's fine.
I will say, DJ YOLO, I really got the sense that he believed the elevator was real and that if he pressed the H button, he really would go to hell.
I think so. Like, he seemed very afraid when he saw his own picture in a wreath in the, like, coffin room.
Yeah, he thought it was a shoot.
It was a shoot. Worked himself into a shoot. So he gets back. We get another one of those elevator surprises with a zombie girl. Again, I wonder if they do this just every fucking episode. And then they do this thing where he's, like, making extra money by selling organs. So the next thing is called Show Your Guts. And Sinead has to, like, grab organs.
And she's trooper. And she wins. And then the next girl isn't able to fulfill the challenge. So she gets kicked out. But the other two contestants can still remain. And then they go to the hell level in the labyrinth. They end up getting some money and they win. So let's stop talking about those challenges because they're really boring.
They were really boring. Although I do like in the Show Your Guts one, when she's weighing it out, when she wins, the evil twins say something along the lines of like, how did she do it? How did she know it was one spleen, one liver, one heart, and two intestines?
Yeah, I was thinking about that after they said that, and I think like maybe they assume people at home would be so into this show that like they would see the contestants looking at that like
the cheat sheet that pops out of the elevator.
The cheat sheet, and they'd be like, oh no, Uncle Jimmy, it has to be this one, that one, and this one. And Uncle Jimmy would be like, oh no, it's obviously two hearts, one intestine, and a kidney. It's gotta be that. And then for those people at home that are super into Hellevator.
Those people at home doing the like mental math and everything on the spleen and weight and everything.
It's to satisfy the five people out there.
Yeah. That would do that. I think you're being a little generous with five people with Hellevator.
There's a season two. Someone has to be watching it.
I don't know. It's the fucking Game Show Network. I don't know what good ratings are for the Game Show Network. But hey, apparently this got it. So yeah, I guess in kayfabe, the last girl that goes, she just dies in this crematorium because she doesn't find this key in time. And like a fake heart shows up in the elevator. So their friends, I guess that's supposed to be their friend's heart.
And that's the beginning and the end of that heart. It serves no purpose.
Yeah. And like, she's still, you can still hear her screams from outside the elevator. And like DJ YOLO and his friend are just like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know why she's still screaming.
Yeah.
So that's it. Like, the labyrinth thing is more confusing and complicated this time around. It's just not even worth going into all the weird stuff. There's a big pit of blood, and the Undertaker's, like, making this, like, organ soup and all this shit. It's really stupid.
He's stirring around, like, the cat by the canteen in Monster Hunter.
Yes, exactly. Like he's the meowskiller chef. Yeah. Yes, he's the Undertaker. So, that's Hellevator. Honestly, it may be dumber than I expected upon seeing the title and watching like the trailer type.
Yeah, there's a lot about it that annoys me.
Yeah,
like the Sasuke sisters really strike me as like some cashier at Hot Topic back in the early 2000s who thought she was too cool for school.
She's got the like Alexa Bliss like weird Terminator hand thing going on.
And I was reading their Wikipedia, and I thought it was funny because the first sentence in their Wikipedia entry is, the Susker sisters were born on their mother's birthday, April 29th, in Canada, and run their own film production company, Twisted Twins Productions. That's the opening sentence. So their primary fact about them is that they were born on their mother's birthday, not the fact that they have this production company.
They wrote this, didn't they?
No, because I looked at who wrote it, because I want to see what other pages they contributed.
You looked at, like, the edit history?
Yes.
Okay,
okay, so one active contributor's name is Scream for Man. And I looked at his Wikipedia profile, and apparently he's an actor best known for his work on Here Comes Honey Boo Boo. So, Yeah, the demographic of people that like the Sasuke sisters apparently also appreciate Honey Boo Boo.
I mean, all these shows that we're covering on Painting This Dream, they obviously have to have some sort of appeal or audience, otherwise I don't think they would have gotten as far as, like, production. Mm. Like, all these shows got greenlit, you know, some of them had very short runs, some of them had multiple seasons. Mad Madhouse had one, right?
Yes.
And unfortunately, Sunshine Sento Sake, I believe, only has one so far, but we will watch
every episode. It seems fairly new.
Yeah, that seems real new.
And from we read some stuff that might be suggesting that it's like a big tourism push for Japan prior to the Tokyo Olympics, so maybe it is kind of going to be the short-lived thing.
Yeah, specifically the one we just watched where his boss says some stuff about like Japanese hospitality.
I mean, the entire show that we've seen is a big advertisement for Japan.
I mean, it does paint Japan in a very, very nice light. It makes me want to go back for sure. But yeah, we are definitely done with Hellevator. We will never watch Hellevator again.
Unless we accidentally stumble our way into the slaughterhouse of the Sasuke sisters.
Pray tell, hopefully we never, ever find ourselves in that neck of the woods.
And the Hellevator will run yellow with the color of our pee, I guess.
It happens a lot, yeah. Well, especially after we've badmouthed the show, I would think the sisters would have some especially diabolical things in store for us.
Like, they make us eat asparagus. And then they put us on the Hellevator where they collect our pee. And because it's close quarters, it'd be really uncomfortable because of the asparagus pee thing.
Do you have that gene?
You know I have the gene. I talk about it all the time.
Wait, is the gene, does it make... Okay, I have the gene, so does that gene make my pee smell like asparagus, or does that make my nose capable of smelling the asparagus pee?
I have no idea.
Okay.
But I assume it's something in you that makes you smell it, but yeah, it smells all the time.
Yes, I bet everyone smells like that. It's like the cilantro soap thing.
Yeah, I'm just going to assume that's correct.
I think we're
right. I'm going to say with my full confidence that that is correct, even though I have no idea whether or not it's correct.
I 100% believe you here.
Okay.
Our show for next week is on Amazon Prime Video. It is called My Living Doll. This is a show that ran on CBS, a fine station. It ran on CBS for 6 months back in the 60s. We're going to watch the first two episodes of this, and it's about a psychiatrist dude who is given care of a lifelike sexy android, played by Julie Newmar, who apparently her creator doesn't want her to like fall into the hands of like the Russians or something, and so gives her to this psychiatrist. I don't know if it's actually Russians. It might be like, you know, I don't know, space aliens or something. And the psychiatrist...
Yeah, Russian space aliens.
You know, bad same guys. Thing. Bad guys. Come on. And so the psychiatrist is going to teach this sexy android lady how to be the perfect woman.
Stepford wife scenario.
Yes. So we will see how that pans out. That is your assignment if you want to watch along for next week's Panning the Stream, is two episodes of My Living Doll on Amazon Prime Video.
It's going to age well, I have a feeling.
I'm sure it'll be great. I'm sure they want to reboot it word for word, kind of like that 98 Psycho remake. It'd be perfect for 2018, I'm sure. So until then, thank you for joining Panning the Stream.
Bye.